Welcome back, Buddhas. Picking up at page 181, we will read to page 201 today. So let's start. Shinichi joined in the joyful discussion. He asked the members frankly, "I know that racial issues are highly controversial here in America, but what do all of you think about the problem?" Nagayasu Masaki translated this for the members. One white youth replied, "Racial discrimination exists everywhere throughout American society. I cannot in all honesty say that I myself am completely free of prejudice. However, since taking faith in the Daishonin's Buddhism and coming into contact and doing activities with all kinds of people, I've come to feel that we are all people who are striving together with one mind to achieve Kosen Rufu." "I see. That's very important," said Shinichi. "The concept of humankind itself encompasses great diversity. There are many different races, ethnic groups, languages, cultures, and nationalities. Also, just as no two people look exactly alike, each person differs in terms of birth, occupation, position, way of thinking, and personal preferences. Human society, or what Buddhism terms our realm of existence, is built upon this diversity. In reality, however, human beings have tended to emphasize each other's differences, classifying people into categories and practicing discrimination. History has seen members of the same human family divided again and again and led into one endless conflict after another because of their stubborn attachment to differences. The Daishonin's Buddhism is a teaching capable of unifying all humanity, bringing together hearts that have long been separated by deep schisms." No one's eyes sparkled more brightly at these words than those of the African-American youth who had earlier asked Shinichi a question. The youth now inquired again, "President Yamamoto, you said that Buddhism will bring people's hearts together. What exactly does Buddhism teach with respect to how people are connected with one another?" "That's a very good question," said Shinichi. "One of the fundamental tenets of Buddhism is that of dependent origination. All phenomena arise from mutually interdependent relationships of various causes and conditions. In other words, Buddhism teaches that nothing can exist entirely on its own, in complete isolation. All things are mutually dependent upon and influence one another." With earnest expressions, the members listened intently to Shinichi's explanation. Shinichi went on to further clarify the Buddhist doctrine of dependent origination. "In the same way, Buddhism teaches that no human being can exist in a state of total isolation. Instead, we gather together and live by supporting and helping one another. This philosophy opposes the idea of rejecting or shutting out certain persons or groups of people. If anything, the principle of dependent origination leads us to give the utmost consideration to how to enable others to reveal their potential, how to establish better human relations, and how to create the greatest possible value." Nodding his agreement, the youth who had asked the question then opened up and expressed what was in his heart. "Until I started practicing Buddhism," he said, "I was constantly obsessed with my roots. I couldn't shake off the thought that we had been brought to America as slaves by the white man. I'm sure that white people harbor similar thoughts about us. They are loath to treat people who were once slaves as their equals or grant us exactly the same rights as they have. For that reason, I despised white Americans. It was impossible for me to like them when I recalled how we, our parents, our grandparents, and our ancestors before them had been exploited, abused, and discriminated against by the white man. From childhood, each time I was bullied or suffered discrimination, it was driven home to me that I was black. At times, I even deplored the blood running through my veins. Then I joined the Soka Gakkai. There, everyone treated me as an equal and warmly encouraged me. It made the whole issue of racial discrimination seem so trivial. I came into contact with the altruistic spirit of the members. And as you just mentioned, I realized that I had been caught up in stressing the differences in the color of our skin. I see, said Shinichi, smiling. It's quite understandable that you should have placed great importance on your own roots. But Buddhism teaches that we are all bodhisattvas of the earth, the most praiseworthy of all bodhisattvas. As children of the Buddha, from time without beginning, these bodhisattvas emerged at their own wish from the vast earth of life to fulfill a mission to realize Kōsun Rufu and to save all people of the latter day of the law. These, if you will, are our ultimate roots. The youth gazed at Shinichi with grave intensity. In short, Shinichi continued, we, indeed all people, are brothers and sisters from the infinite past who share a mission to bring peace and happiness to the world we live in. What we decide to base ourselves on has a drastic influence on the meaning of our own individual lives. For instance, a large tree with leafy green branches will not grow in the desert or on top of solid rock. It will only thrive in rich, fertile soil. Similarly, if we are to become great human beings capable of realizing a rich blossoming of humanity and a fruition of glory in our lives, then it is vital that we stand firm and prosper in whatever soil we may find ourselves. Establishing this kind of solid basis is to have an awareness of our mission as bodhisattvas of the earth. The earth belongs equally to everyone. It revitalizes all human beings, transcending racial, ethnic, and national distinctions, and supports the flourishing of culture. A vibrant wellspring of pure altruism, of compassion, surges forth from its soil. If everyone to awaken to their mission as bodhisattvas of the earth and take action based on it, there would not be the slightest doubt that we could build true world peace and human harmony. The youth's eyes sparkled brightly. Gazing at him intently, Shinichi spoke with powerful emphasis. I'm sure you must have suffered many bitter sorrows and hardships in your life. But now you have awakened to your identity as a bodhisattva of the earth. You have started a new life. Don't dwell on the past. Live strongly, turning your eyes to the future, and to eradicate the root causes of the suffering you have experienced because of unjust discrimination, let's stand together as champions of the cause of human liberation. Shinichi extended his hand to the youth, who clasped it in a firm, strong handshake. The youth's spirited expression broadened into a bright smile. This joyous discussion became a forum for the members to exchange vows of friendship and make a new departure towards the future. After the Japanese-speaking group finished their discussion, they rejoined the English-speaking group. Shinichi then announced the formation of two new districts, one in Chicago and one in Kentucky. Miyako Coleman, who had been active as a central figure in the city, was appointed Chicago District Chief. Shinichi took the gold Soka Gakkai pin he wore on his lapel and presented it to Miyako's husband, Mark. This gesture expressed Shinichi's wish that the Colemans pool their energy and strive for the happiness of the people of Chicago with an awareness and determination equal to his own. After the discussion meeting, Shinichi and the other leaders, accompanied by the Colemans, went for a walk around Chicago's downtown area. Trains rumbled by on the elevated circular railway tracks known as the Loop that snaked their way between the city's towering skyscrapers. In the train's reverberations, Shinichi could hear the dynamic pulsing of the bustling city of Chicago. Shinichi's heart, too, was beating vibrantly. He was overjoyed to have witnessed, at the discussion meeting, clear proof that heart-to-heart bonds could be formed among people, which could heal the deep rifts of racial discrimination that ran through American society. Shinichi stopped at a camera shop and bought an instant picture camera. He wanted to take snapshots of the people he met on his travels and then present them with the photographs on the spot. With his new camera, Shinichi wasted no time in taking a picture on Michigan Avenue. He called out to a young boy who was passing by and asked one of the other leaders to take a photo of them together. Shinichi wanted to speak to all the children in America who would one day shoulder their country's future. He wanted to share with them his great expectations for the future and to offer them his best wishes. The group then decided to go to the top of the Prudential Building, renowned at that time as one of the tallest buildings in the United States. Lake Michigan, spreading out before them, shone like a golden mirror in the light of the setting sun. The blue waters of the lake glowed with golden brilliance, Shinichi observed, because they were bathed in the sun's rays. Human beings, too, when infused with the light of Buddhism, become golden Buddhas. Gazing out over the city of Chicago in the twilight glow, Shinichi vowed to bring the sun of the mystic law, which illuminates the darkness of hearts obscured by clouds of prejudice and hate, to shine over America. He was painfully aware that this could only be achieved by gaining many new members and thoroughly fostering each person. By the time the group had dined and returned to the hotel, it was around 8 p.m. Shinichi was still running fever and felt increasingly fatigued as night approached. Walking to their rooms, the leaders noticed a group of four women and two children sitting on the floor in the hallway. They were Japanese members who had traveled to Chicago from Kentucky. Dearly wishing to see Shinichi one more time before making their way back home, the women had waited patiently for his return. "Why are they sitting in the hallway?" muttered Yukio Ishikawa to himself in an undertone, clicking his tongue in annoyance. "They could have sat in the sofas in the lobby and waited. If people saw them here, they'd think it very strange." Shinichi paid no heed to his remarks. "Hello there, is something the matter?" Shinichi asked the woman who sat in the hallway. "Sensei, thank goodness we caught you. We very much wanted to receive some guidance from you before we went back." "I see," said Shinichi. "Thank you for waiting all this time. Well then, please come to my room. You must be exhausted." He led them to his hotel room, but when they reached the door, the Japanese women hesitated, apparently not wishing to intrude. Shinichi courteously invited them in, saying, "Please, there's no need to stand on ceremony." The women were not well dressed, but to Shinichi, each appeared as a noble golden Buddha who would lead her friends in America to happiness. Buddhas do not exist in some far-off realm. They dwell here in this very real, strife-ridden Saha world. A Buddha dwells within each living, breathing human being who experiences problems, sufferings, and joy. Shinichi had resolved that his personal responsibility as president was to protect and serve such Buddhas. Not fictitious ones, but real Buddhas, the people who dedicate their lives to fulfilling their missions for Kosen Rifu. This was his conviction and his philosophy. The discussion had barely begun when the children started whimpering. Guessing that they must be hungry, Katsu Kiyohara quickly went to buy a large assortment of snacks and sweets for them. Having scrimped and saved to pay for their trip to Chicago, the women from Kentucky obviously had no money left over to buy their children sweets. Shinichi was deeply gladdened by Kiyohara's thoughtfulness. It was evident from their stories that the women were grappling with momentous problems in their daily lives. Yet, the announcement of a district being formed in Kentucky had filled their hearts with joy and a vibrant spirit of construction that far transcended their personal suffering. Just as a river courses over rocks and stones, life is full of problems and sufferings. If the river flows strongly, the rocks and stones will not only be submerged, but eventually be eroded and washed away. The profound inner joy and dynamic vitality of a life dedicated to achieving the mission of peace known as Kosun Rufu resembles the powerful flow of a river. With the joy of faith, one can calmly sweep away and triumph over all sufferings, no matter how numerous they may be. Shinichi continued to give wholehearted encouragement to the women until it was time for them to leave to catch their bus. He strove with all his might to create a turning point for each person so that she could embark on a course towards happiness in life, much in the way that a plane soars upwards in response to the brief, well-timed movement of the flight controls. The group set aside their third day in Chicago for an extensive tour of the city. Shinichi Yamamoto felt that this great metropolis of Chicago could show them what Japan might look like in the future. In the car, Shinichi chanted Daimoku continuously. Since taking his first step in Hawaii on this overseas trip, he had tried to chant Daimoku at all times. He was determined to permeate the new land of America with his Daimoku, offering prayers for its prosperity. Shinichi and the other leaders visited various sites in Chicago's industrial area, including an automated factory where electrical appliances were manufactured. As they strolled down the street, their eyes were drawn to some election posters covering the window of what appeared to be a campaign office for the Democratic Party. A presidential election was to be held on November 8. American voters would go to the polls to elect not only their new president, but many state governors and members of both the Senate and the House of Representatives. The Japanese group's visit thus coincided with the most intense period of campaigning before the election. In particular, the presidential campaign saw a neck-and-neck race between Republican candidate Richard M. Nixon, who was then vice president, and Democratic candidate John F. Kennedy. With Nixon at 47 and his opponent Kennedy at 43, it was a contest between two youthful nominees. The U2 affair earlier that year had led to the scuttling of a planned East-West summit meeting, and the Cold War seemed to be right back where it had started. This prompted people to place their hopes and expectations on a new president who could restore America's prestige and usher in a bright future. Perhaps not surprisingly, then, interest in the election was extremely high. Nixon had taken the lead, appealing to his political experience and referring to himself as President Eisenhower's successor. Kennedy, meanwhile, stressed a new program, which he hailed as the New Frontier, aimed at revitalizing American society. Their televised debates, in particular, saw the unfolding of an intense battle as one candidate asserted his experience, while the other retorted that experience was fine. But the most important thing was a philosophy and vision for the future. In the youthful image of Kennedy that was presented on their TV screens, many people found a fresh sense of hope and of new possibilities for the future. Every new era is ushered in by fresh talent and ability. As he listened to Nagaya Sumasaki describe the progress of the presidential election campaign, Shinichi thought, "The American people are yearning for a new leader and new ideals. And just as surely they must be longing for the profound and yet still unknown philosophy of the Daishonin's Buddhism." He gazed silently at Kennedy's poster. That afternoon, Shinichi and the other leaders took a drive to the rural areas outside the city. A quiet, rustic landscape stretched out all around them. "It would be great if we could talk with some of the farmers and ask them about how they live," Shinichi remarked. As they drove past a farmhouse, they saw a young woman standing outside. She appeared to be a farmer's wife. Nagaya Sumasaki stopped the car, and Shinichi stepped out and greeted the woman with a bright smile and a warm hello. Masaki followed him, explaining in English, "Good afternoon. We are interested in learning a little bit about the lives of farmers here in the Chicago area." He then added, This is Mr. Shinichi Yamamoto from Japan. He is the president of the Soka Gakkai, a Buddhist organization dedicated to realizing world peace and human happiness. The woman was happy to respond to Masaki's questions, describing the Chicago farmers' daily lives, the crops they grew, and even sharing the history of her own family, which she said had immigrated from Germany. Hearing the conversation, an elderly woman then came out of the house to join them. She seemed to be somewhere in her 70s. "Oh, this is Grandma," said the younger woman. "Today is her birthday." Hearing this, Shinichi took the elderly woman's hand and said in Japanese, "Is that so? Congratulations, my very best wishes. Please live a long, long life. Nothing could be a greater source of joy for your family than your staying in good health. It will make everyone happy. I also hope that your whole family will please cherish you above all. This spirit not only strengthens the bonds of affection among you, it is a source of enduring prosperity for your family. Happiness is not in some faraway place. It is found within the family." Masaki translated for Shinichi. The elderly woman smiled in delight at the good wishes conveyed by the stranger from Japan. Gazing at the woman's bright face, Shinichi proposed, "Let's all celebrate by singing Happy Birthday." The others joined with Shinichi in a chorus, their voices soaring into the air above the green fields. It was a heartwarming interlude of friendship and goodwill. Tears came to the woman's eyes as she stood in their midst. When they had finished singing, Shinichi took a photo of everyone with his instant picture camera and gave it to the woman. Looking deeply moved, she said, "Thank you. You don't even know me, yet here you are celebrating my birthday. This has been the happiest day of my life. I hope you will go on to create still many more happy memories in the future," Shinichi said. "Just because our bodies may age and our faces may become wrinkled, this doesn't mean that our hearts have to wither as well. Depending on our attitude, our hearts can remain eternally young. I hope that you will enjoy a life of perpetual youth and stay ever young at heart. Please promise me that you will live at least 200. When Nagayasu Masaki translated Shinichi's words, the woman blushed and looked somewhat doubtful. "I don't think I can live that long," she said. "But I promise to live with a youthful heart, as you said. Thank you so very much." Her voice choked with emotion and no other words would come. She then held out her arms and embraced Shinichi. Though this was their first encounter, in that brief time, their hearts resonated harmoniously together in a beautiful symphony of friendship. The depth of human interaction or relations between people is not necessarily determined by the length of their acquaintance. The air of humanism emanating from a person's character inspires an echoing response in others' hearts, nurturing bonds and friendships. As they drove off, the elderly woman stood waving until their car had disappeared from sight. Shinichi always strove to treasure each encounter. Whether or not the other party was a Soka Gakkai member, Shinichi poured his heart into each meeting, planting seedlings of hope, encouraging luxuriant leaves of friendship to grow, and creating new value. This is the true way of life for a Buddhist who is aware of the principle of dependent origination that unifies all human beings. The next day, October 11, the group left Chicago for Toronto, Canada. They were told that at that time, there were no members in Canada. The purpose of their visit was to purchase construction materials for the grand reception hall that was scheduled to be built at the head temple, Taiseikeiji, and to observe local conditions in Canada. From the plane window, they gazed down upon a vast expanse of brilliantly blazing autumn foliage. The land, dyed in vivid hues of red and gold, resembled a sea of flames. It was truly a golden autumn. The group arrived at Toronto Airport just before noon. As expected, the Canadian air was rather chilly. As soon as they reached the airport lobby, Nagayasu Masaki went to rent a car. While the others were waiting, some distance away, a young Japanese woman with large eyes, wearing a green coat and a scarf around her head, gazed intently in their direction. The woman came up to them and asked in a quiet voice, "Excuse me, are you members of the Soka Gakkai?" They were not expecting anyone to meet them here in Toronto. Though somewhat puzzled by her presence, their hearts leapt hopefully at the thought that she might be a member. "Yes, we are," Kiyoshi Jujo answered. "Are you a member too?" "No, I'm not." They gazed at the woman somewhat bewildered and waited for her to continue. "My mother is a Soka Gakkai member in Japan, and I'm here because she asked me to come and meet you." "Is that so?" said Shinichi, smiling. "Thank you for taking the trouble to come all this way to greet us. I am Shinichi Yamamoto, president of the Soka Gakkai. May I ask your name?" "Yes, it's Teruko Izumiya." "And what chapter does your mother belong to?" "I think she said it was Kamata chapter." "It says a lot about your mother's character that she should worry about our arrival and ask her daughter to come and welcome us. I greatly appreciate it. How do you come to be in Canada, by the way?" "My husband works for a trading company and he was transferred here. We arrived 6 months ago." Izumiya answered Shinichi's questions cheerfully, a bright smile lighting her face. Teruko Izumiya lived in a Toronto suburb that was about 20 minutes by car from the airport. Her mother, concerned about her daughter who had married and gone to live in Canada, had sent her letters urging her to take faith in the Daishonin's Buddhism. However, all the talk of punishment and benefit that filled these letters had sounded terribly outdated to Izumiya and had made her feel resistant to the idea. She didn't even feel inclined to look through the copies of Seikyo Shimbun, the Soka Gakkai's newspaper, which her mother sent her regularly. Then, just that morning, she had received an airmail letter from her mother informing her that President Yamamoto and a group of leaders from the Soka Gakkai would be visiting Toronto on the 11th. Her mother had written, "President Yamamoto will be an internationally renowned leader someday. Please go and meet him at the airport." For a moment, Izumiya had wavered over whether to go. She was 6 months pregnant and hadn't been feeling well all morning. It would be more than she could bear if, after going all the way out to the airport, she was then proselytized too. Yet, not to go would be disrespectful of her mother's wishes, a thought that made her feel remorseful and disloyal. Thus, she had decided to go to the airport. Shinichi asked Izumiya about her life in Canada and outlined for her why faith was important, explaining that Buddhism constituted the law of life itself. There was nothing high-handed in his manner, nor was he pushy or overly insistent about her taking faith. Moreover, what he said made clear and perfect sense. She began to feel that perhaps she had been wrong about the Soka Gakkai after all. "In any event, should you be faced with a problem, please chant Daimoku," Shinichi advised. Izumiya accepted his words without resentment. Presently, Nagayasu Masaki returned with a rented station wagon. The group then took a commemorative photo together with Izumiya. Shinichi asked Izumiya how she had come to the airport. She replied that she had come by taxi. "We'll drive you home then," Shinichi offered. "No, that won't be necessary. I'll take a taxi home." Shinichi was loath to allow Izumiya, the only person who had come to welcome them at the airport, to travel home alone by taxi. However, when they had loaded all their luggage into the station wagon and the leaders themselves got in, the car was packed. "Please wait a moment. I'll make some room," said Shinichi. They took out the luggage and tried to rearrange it several times, but no matter how they tried, they could not make enough space to accommodate her. Izumiya's heart was warmed by the sincerity and thoughtfulness that Shinichi Yamamoto showed her in wanting to give her a lift home. "I'll be all right. Please don't worry. Please go ahead without me," she said. Shinichi apologized deeply, stating repeatedly how sorry he was that they could not drive her home. As they were leaving, he gave her the name of the hotel where they were staying. "If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to contact me. I'll make sure to let your mother know that you are well and doing fine when I return to Japan." Izumiya waved goodbye to the group until their car had disappeared from view. Sitting in the taxi on her way home, she felt light-hearted and refreshed. In contrast to the heavy feeling that had weighed upon her as she left the house, she now felt as if warm rays of morning sunlight were streaming into her heart, clearing away the mist that had earlier enshrouded her. This was not merely due to a sense of relief at having dutifully fulfilled her mother's request to go to meet President Yamamoto and his party. Izumiya realized that this first encounter with the reality of the faith her mother practiced so wholeheartedly had left her feeling very pleased and happy. Coming into contact with the sincerity, thoughtfulness, and conviction that emanated from President Yamamoto's being, as well as his rational and logical explanation of Buddhist theory, she could sense that the faith her mother practiced was quite special. Izumiya was aware that something had changed fundamentally in her own heart. A few weeks later, a parcel containing several books on the Soka Gakkai arrived in the mail. They were from Shinichi Yamamoto. 1 year and 7 months after her first meeting with the Soka Gakkai president at Toronto Airport, Teruko Izumiya took faith in the Daishonin's Buddhism of her own accord. At that time, the seed sown by Shinichi sprouted and, in time, would herald the arrival of spring for Kosen Rifu in Canada. Izumiya's efforts contributed to the advancement of Kosen Rifu in Canada. Shinichi and the other leaders arrived and checked in at the King Edward Hotel on King Street. Everyone then decided to go sightseeing around the central city area, except Shinichi, who stayed in the hotel because he was still feeling under the weather. The fever that had plagued him since Seattle tended to peak in the afternoons. Shinichi knew that all he needed was some rest. However, he had resolved to exert a year's effort in each day on this overseas trip, so he had to content himself with snatching a few moments' rest wherever time permitted and in such a way that did not adversely affect his schedule. He had to continue at this strenuous pace, aware all the time that he was pushing himself to unreasonable limits. That brings us to the end of today's reading. In the next episode, we will be able to complete Golden Autumn. So I will see you then. Have a good day.